This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. Four people, one study, the internet access brain implant to bind or destroy them all. Now available in print and ebook from author R.R. Campbell and Nine Star Press, it's Imminent Dawn, the first book in the epic empathy sci-fi saga. Learn more about the book reviewers are calling freaking sci-fi Game of Thrones and an incisive techno-thriller that gets more tense with every page by visiting empathyseries.com. That's empathyseries.com. Thanks for listening. Conferences, online classes, these days it can seem an awful lot like the only way to improve one's writing is by collaborating with others. But what if I told you this episode's guest will reveal ways to turn your reading time into productive writing time as well? Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 54 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. For this episode, I'll be interviewing Meg Gertner, who'll walk us through the ins and outs of reading like a writer, what that means, why it's important, and how we can sharpen our writerly skills even when not writing words of our own. If Meg's name sounds familiar, I'm not surprised. Meg has appeared on our programming in episodes 8 and 27 of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast to discuss best case practices for querying and creating effective writerly goals, respectively. For those of you who are new to Meg and her incredible cache of insight, Meg is a YA fantasy author and children's book editor. She has an MFA in creative writing from Antioch University, LA, and she's a member of SCBWI and AWP. All right, let's hop into my conversation with Meg Gertner, YA author and readerly writer. Or is it writerly reader? Either way, it's time to hunker down for this interview. Stay tuned afterward for updates on future episodes of the show, and thanks, as always, for listening. Well, thank you very much, Meg, for joining me once more for an episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan.
Yeah, it's really great to have you back, and I'm very excited to talk about this topic in particular. It's something that I try to practice, and it sounds like you do as well, which is, of course, reading like a writer. So why don't we start by talking about what that means to you? What is reading like a writer?
Sure. So to me, reading like a writer means reading books specifically to learn about the craft of writing. I mean, obviously, there are plenty of craft books out there that writers can read to get ideas about revision techniques or voice or plot or what have you. There are also plenty of MFA programs that people can attend. But there's also the free education writers can receive from reading books and learning from the choices those authors made. So to me, reading like a writer is taking advantage of the freely available teachers out there.
Right. So it sounds like rather than taking a look at a work of nonfiction, which is perhaps instructional and talking about, like you said, this is how you can really bring voice to the page. This is what's really effective in terms of structuring dialogue. We're talking about looking at actual fiction that has been put out by other writers of fiction and analyzing it to see what we can do in terms of making connections between some of that instructional nonfiction education and what it is that we're actually seeing in the wild, so to speak.
Exactly. That's a great way of putting it.
Cool. Well, then we'll go on a safari here today in terms of reading like a writer. Let's talk then, of course, about the advantages to reading like a writer. To reading like a writer. What do you see as being the advantages of that?
Well, I'd say there certainly are no disadvantages to it. I think that reading like a writer, quite frankly, can make us better writers. I'm going to make the assumption that if you're a writer, you probably like books and are reading books anyway. So
we
why not
use
that experience to improve your skills as a writer? And
yeah.
For me, I think that pretty much any book could be a good teacher because if, let's say you have a specific genre that you write in, reading books in that genre can help you see what other authors have done. What have they been successful with? What have they been unsuccessful with? And if you're noticing problems in your own writing, it can help to see how others have solved those problems. On the other hand, reading outside of your genre can also be educational, so that you aren't just revisiting the same tropes, but adding something fresh to your work. I know for myself, reading poetry in particular can be a study in precision in word choice, language, and imagery, whereas reading thrillers can be a study in suspense. Reading those books can help me better understand how to build suspense in my own writing, even if I'm not writing in particular a thriller. Similarly, in kind of continuing with this theme that every book can be a teacher, well-written books can obviously teach us about what works in story, but even really bad books can be helpful. They Right. let us know what doesn't work objectively and also what doesn't work for us specifically. So reading widely helps us develop our own aesthetics as writers.
Right. And you're kind of touching on what I was hoping to get into next, but I think there are some really great takeaways from what you've just shared now, which is, of course, that as writers, I'm sure you've heard this all of the time. I hear it from agents, I hear it from editors, you hear it conferences, what have you. It's this idea that we need to know our genre. You know, we really need to be engrossed in what it is that's on the market right now if we're going to produce work that we hope, especially if you're looking to branch out and work in the world of traditional publishing, you have to know your genre. But to your point, we really need a robust diet of what we're reading in terms of fiction, especially if we want to try and bring, like you said, some new takes on perhaps old tropes to the genre in which we're writing. What can we take a look at? Let's say we're a writer of romance. Well, what can we learn from reading a thriller like a writer and bring that to our pages in terms of suspense in the world of romance, just as one example? So I'm really glad you talked about not just reading as a writer in general, but very specifically, you know, making sure that we're reaching out into these different genres to make sure that we're bringing something fresh to the page and to our minds, of course, as well, and just in terms of being well-rounded readers. So very good. Well, you touched on this a little bit, but reading like a writer, you know, have you had anything recently that you felt has really been of benefit to you specifically in your writing?
Yeah, I've recently been rereading the Raven Cycle series by Maggie Stiefvater. And that's a series where I've read it before, I'm rereading it for the second time. So I just have my pen and paper next to me as I'm reading, and every few pages I'm just having to stop and just say, wow, what she did here was brilliant. So let me take notes on what's working. And so some of the things I've especially been taking away from her has just been, you know, how to create descriptions that really jump off the page and evoke emotions and kind of carry double weight rather than just painting a visual picture for readers. How can they also create an emotional resonance for readers as well? And she does a really good job of kind of pausing psychological time in key emotional moments. So I've been taking notes on that about, you know, if I really want my readers to have an emotional experience while they're reading the book, how can I linger in those moments to give readers the space to feel? And you know, I've kind of made this point before that it's really helpful to read both good and bad books, because while Maggie Stiefvater does that really well of creating space for readers to have an emotional experience, I've also read other books that have not been successful at conveying an emotional experience. And so being able to contrast the two has given me a much better sense of how to evoke emotion and how to, yeah, as I said, how to create space for readers to have an emotional experience.
Yeah, it's about providing, in a way, a sort of framework or a lens through which readers can then really establish, it's really strengthening that connection between readers and the character and the weight of the moment on the page, it would seem. And I really like how you phrased that, pausing psychological time. I have not heard that before, but that's a really brilliant way to think about it, because we do, as writers, have this great opportunity in front of us where we can step out of space and time for however briefly that we might need to do it, to really make sure that we give every moment the greatest impact that it can possibly have. And it sounds like that's something that's really shining through in the Raven Cycle.
Yeah, and she actually, I took notes on this. It's almost a formula that she uses at these key emotional moments, and I'll just touch on it here because I think it's so brilliant. But you know, she'll write a sentence of something that happens, something big happens, and then she'll take a full paragraph to cut away from the present moment to a memory that the main character has that serves as an extended metaphor of the experience the character is having in the present moment. So for that entire paragraph, she's drawing us out of the chronological time of the story, giving this us this deep memory metaphor that really adds to our understanding of how the character is experiencing. She's also not just telling us what the character is experiencing, but letting us kind of come to our own conclusion based on this memory. And then she kind of concludes this cycle with another single sentence to bring us back to the present moment, connecting the memory and the feeling. So in having that full paragraph there, she's really slowing down the pace, heightening the emotional tension, kind of letting us linger in this big moment that so much has been building toward. And the way I think of it too is, by having this full paragraph there, it takes time for a reader to physically read a paragraph. It takes, and even that time to just have to read those words is giving the reader also time to really take in the moment. So that, yes, she does it very well.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be adding this to my Goodreads to be read pile after this conversation.
Oh, yes.
It seems like a really good one to like actively read as a writer, which it, for me, at least in my perspective, I don't go into every book, you know, thinking, all right, I'm going to read this one like a writer. It just so happens that once in a while I pick up a book and I'm like, oh, wow. It's when I find myself truly in awe of like an apparent pattern of deliberate choices that a writer is making to really emphasize whatever it is they're trying to emphasize. That's when I have to bust out the moleskin and the pencil and start taking notes at night. And that kind of has me curious, you know, do you make a conscious effort to read in this way, or does it just kind of come naturally to you over the course of reading a book?
Well, in the first case, I definitely had to train myself to pay attention as I was reading, because for me, the best reading experience I can have is to be so fully immersed in the story that I don't even realize I'm reading.
Right.
Where the language is so fluid, the world built so thoroughly, the point of view so consistent, etc., that I can just lose myself and live in the story. And that experience definitely does not lend itself to being critically aware while reading.
Right.
But I was first introduced to the idea of reading like a writer during my MFA program. And there it was an assignment. I had a certain number of books to read each semester and write craft reviews for. So I began reading each book, went into reading each book with a pen and a notebook by my side and post-it notes and a critical eye. I wasn't looking to get lost in the book. I was looking to get an education. But the more I did that exercise, the more natural the process became. So now I'll read a book and it's like my subconscious mind is paying attention while I go. I'm not deliberately taking notes after every page, but kind of as you were saying, every once in a while I'll pause and think, I see what the author did here. And if it's something that I think I can apply to my own writing, I write it down. And then sometimes I also deliberately set out to understand how an author accomplished her story, especially if I'm rereading a book or a series that I love. So that was the case with Raven Cycle, where I knew the story, I knew what happened, so I didn't have to be constantly wondering what was going on, but I also knew what I liked about the story. I knew how the story affected me. So I could take notes and pay attention as I read to see how she achieved that effect.
We'll be right back with Meg Gertner after this brief message. Are you a writer or other creative looking to signal boost your work? I bet you are. There's a reason you're listening to this podcast, after all. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, founder of the Writescast Network, and I wanted to take a moment to talk to you about advertising on the Writescast Network. Now, I know advertising with Google, Twitter, Facebook, or who knows what else, it can be cost prohibitive, confusing, and extremely intimidating. I totally understand. That's why I want to let you know that it's worth considering advertising with the Writescast Network, where for less than a dollar a month, less than a dollar a month, you can introduce your book, editing services, writing-related podcast, or other creative endeavor to hundreds of new listeners. You can advertise on targeted episodes to make sure your science fiction book is heard by listeners with an interest in sci-fi, or that your romance novel is fawned over by listeners who love, well, love. You want to learn more? Of course you do. You can visit writescast.net/advertise and learn more today, or email me directly at writescast@gmail.com with your questions. Again, that's writescast.net/advertise or writescast@gmail.com. Your book, our airwaves, let's make it happen at writescast.net/advertise. Now we return to this conversation about reading like a writer with Meg Gertner. Yeah, and that's something I've found myself doing as well, is there will be a book that I, you know, I could have read it years ago, perhaps before I was even really actively writing in a way that I would say is similar to how I'm writing now. And I'm just like, you know, I really liked that book. I'm going to pick it up and just reread it. And after having had time away, after having become a little bit more focused on the craft of writing, I was able to see that book. I'm thinking in this particular instance of David Mitchell's Cloud Atlas. And I was able to kind of appreciate some of the things that he was doing in that series. I had a similar feeling when reading Margaret Atwood's Mad Adams series that I had to go back and reread all of it. And when I reread it for that second time, it was, wow, here is the opportunity that I now have as someone who's familiar with the plot. I know the direction we're going. I have this sort of familiarity with the characters. I can now really kind of take that just a little half step back and still enjoy the story, but also really appreciate the techniques that were employed by these remarkable authors to create such a vivid narrative.
Yes, exactly.
And
it sounds like these were books that you were going to be rereading anyways.
They were. You know, I didn't pick them up off the shelf and say, okay, it's time to read like a writer. It was very much like, I haven't read these books in a few years. Or in the case of the Mad Adams series, I had read book one and two, started book three, couldn't quite get into it. But co-host for the Novel Approaches podcast, Sione Ashleman, was really just hyping it up to me. She's like, I love book three. It might be my favorite. You got to give it a shot. So I was like, all right. Give it another shot, but I'm going to read the whole series. And as I was reading it, I was like, okay, now that I really appreciate, I was able to slow down and understand the structure of the series as a whole a bit differently. And I think in having that understanding, I was then able to not only read book three, but really enjoy it and also, you know, appreciate the finer points of it from a writer's perspective. So sometimes we need that, we need our own pause in psychological time to come back and appreciate books the way they're maybe meant to be appreciated the first time around.
Definitely.
And I'm curious, too, you know, you mentioned with your MFA program, that was kind of what got you thinking about this in a deliberate way. What was, you know, how can someone who's not used to reading like a writer begin to do so? What was that like for you? What did you actually try to do to get yourself in that mindset?
I mean, well, it definitely helped to have an assignment to be required. To
right. Yes.
And I can just briefly share what that assignment was like for listeners who might benefit from having kind of a structure as they go into this. So for our assignment, we had to write a craft analysis after reading each book. And the craft analyses had this very kind of rigid three paragraph structure where the first paragraph is just a summary of the book. The second paragraph is highlighting a particular element of craft that you felt worked or did not work well in the book. It could be voice, imagery, setting, word choice, point of view, whatever. And then a final paragraph where you reflect on how you might apply what you learned to your own writing. And I found that following a structure like this and actually taking the time to write out a craft analysis really helped me and required me to clarify my thoughts about a book and solidify whatever I had learned while reading it. But especially at the beginning for me, it wasn't enough to just read a book and think, oh, that was a good book. I liked what the author did here. But having to take the time and dig a little deeper into exactly what technique the author was using and what effect that technique achieved, taking the time to write that out really cemented the learning for me.
Yeah, it sounds like the main takeaway here is that being deliberate, and like you said, if you are the kind of person who needs that structure, you know, whether you are or not, I think there is something to be said for compartmentalization and using that sort of three-pronged approach of like, here's the good, here's the could have been better, but here is how what I can do with this new knowledge in both of these paragraphs and both of these previously established points to help my writing be the best that it can be and what I really want to get out of it. And I think that that's actually a really, that's a simple 1, 2, 3. And I think some of the best teaching that we can do in, you know, sharing what's worked for us as readers and writers is to make things simple. And I think that's a really simple way to put it out there into the universe and hopefully help some people start, you know, reading as writers a bit more often.
Yeah, definitely.
And so now we're taking a look at, you know, we've had this opportunity to kind of explore what we mean by reading like a writer, some good case practices for getting up and running with that. But I'm kind of curious to know now, like, let's say we've used this three-pronged approach, we're finding it that it's effective, but is there anything else that we can do to make sure we're getting the most out of reading like a writer? I know you mentioned earlier, you'll take notes. That's something that I will do when reading like a writer, but as you're reading, you know, do you stop every time a thought occurs to you, or do you kind of wait till you get to the end of a chapter and then go back and reflect? What's the process really look like for you?
Yeah, so the moment I notice something or something, some technique the author is using just starts jumping off the page, I will, or especially if I start to notice that I am feeling something emotional while reading the book, somehow the words on the page are striking a chord within me, I will make a quick scribble in my notebook, try to identify what the author did there, and I'll also add the page number so I can refer back to that book for a concrete example at a later date. That's definitely been helpful to me for just cementing what I'm taking away from the book. And then as for a more philosophical answer to your question about what can readers do to get the most out of their reading, I think it helps for writers to define for themselves the kind of writer that they want to be and the kind of impact that they want to have on their readers. This sort of mission statement can help writers determine which books would be most useful for them to study. So for example, as a writer, I am most interested in books that achieve an emotional effect. That's literally all I've been talking about this whole time.
Right.
These are books that make me feel something, that make me 100% invested in the characters, that make me want to stay in the world long after I finish reading the book. Those are the books that I want to write. So those are the books that I'm most interested in learning from. I definitely don't take books on every book that I read. For one, there are just a lot of books out there. And there are a lot of books that are good for a relaxing afternoon, but then I'll just forget about them. They just don't stay with me for whatever reason. But when I come across a book that sucker punched me in the best possible way, I want to know how the author did that. So those are the books that I'll go back and read like a writer. To that, you know, kind of going back to that point, it might also be easiest for writers to start with books that they know they love. So take the book that most captures your attention. Think about what you love about the book. Is it the characters? Is it the pacing? Is it how the book made you feel? What were the key moments in the book that really struck you? Then read the book and keep an eye out for how the author achieves those effects. I think that sort of process of starting with the books you know you love, starting with the books that make you feel the way you want your readers to feel, that can be a good way to get into this process of reading like a writer. And one of the benefits of reading like a writer is that no one's telling you what to read. This is a completely self-guided education, a learn at your own pace, choose your own teachers sort of process. So what kind of writer do you want to be? Find the books that will most help you become that writer.
Yeah, it seems like it really all comes down to having a sort of highly targeted deconstruction of work that we really appreciate. Like you said, you know those moments. You know when you're connecting emotionally with something. And maybe it's not until after you finished reading because you were so immersed in the narrative dream that you couldn't even think about coming up for air so that you could take these notes. But you might be able to go back later and say, boy, this scene really stuck with me. I need to go back, find that page, and just read over it again and try and deconstruct, you know, that's a very highly targeted working our way backward to the atomic level of the story itself and really seeing what it was that set off, what elicited, what sparked that emotional reaction. And that sounds like it's an incredibly effective way to actually analyze a text.
Yes, absolutely.
And then, you know, as we start to wrap up here, I'm curious, any final tips or suggestions that you have for folks who are interested in reading like a writer?
I guess the last point would be that, because we've been talking a lot about the books that really struck us the most, that really impacted us and the ones that we love, but just a final reminder that every book can be educational and it can be just as informative to read a book that you do not like as it is to read books you do like. So I've noticed that if I'm reading a book and I notice myself losing interest or I'm being pulled out of the world of the story, or in the most extreme case, I'm just choosing not to finish the book at all, I will make sure to take a moment to consider why, what's not working in the book. And sometimes it's an element of craft or a technique, and sometimes it's more just the aesthetic of a book, or I'm learning more about characters that I don't like reading about, so I wanna make sure I don't write those characters. But in any case, we can articulate the reasons why we would put down a book, we can then make sure we don't do those things in our own writing.
Sounds like every book can be educational, whether we like it or not. It's just important that we take on this challenge and see what it can offer us as writers at the end of the day. So thank you so much, Meg. This was a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming back on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. This was great.
There you have it. Thanks again to Meg for joining me for this episode, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in as always. I, of course, must also thank all of the RightsCast Network's patrons at patreon.com/rightscast for their support of our programming at $1, $2, or $3 per episode. In exchange for those financial contributions, RightsCast Network patrons get access to all sorts of wonderful writerly perks, including early ad-free access to every episode of our programming, RightsCast Network swag, and discounts on my editing services. I owe Kristen Oakley an additional tip of the cap for her support at $3 per episode, so thank you, Kristen, for helping us work toward our goal of becoming self-sustaining. If you'd like to cash in on great patron rewards by becoming a donor at $1, $2, or $3 per episode, or even per month, you can visit patreon.com/rightscast to learn more. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is an R.R. Campbell RightsCast interview of Kira Henschel, owner of Henschel House Publishing. She'll join me for a conversation about what it's like to run an independent press, as well as how her experience helping authors achieve their publication goals can help you. That's all for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast. Until we return on April 5th with that episode featuring Kira Henschel, you can find us online at rightscast.net and as RightsCast on Twitter. Or, if you'd like to contact me directly, I'm on Twitter as IamRRCampbell, and my author site is rrcampbellwrites.com. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on, and write well. This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.